Hello.
Hi, and welcome to Mass Murder, your true crime self-care podcast. We're your hostesses, Avery
and Nicole, and we're here to tell you about two things: masks and murder. First, we're going to dive into a true crime story. Then we'll follow it up with a little self-care feel-good session, and we're going to try out a new mask and tell you what we think about it.
But before we get to today's story, we want to remind you we are not psychologists or statisticians and have no medical background. So please don't take all of our comments as facts. We did our best to Google everything and read articles and, you know, pair it with, obviously, our true crime obsessions and our general opinions. This is what we came up with. In today's story, we're going to talk about Derek Todd Lee, aka the Baton Rouge Killer. His was the first criminal trial that used a new sort of DNA evidence known as DNA witness, which we'll dive into more detail later in the story, but let's get started. Derek Todd Lee was born on November 5th, 1968 in St. Francisville, Louisiana, to parents Samuel and Florence. His father suffered from mental illness and left Florence after Derek was born. He later served time in a mental institution after trying to kill Derek's mother. Florence later remarried. Derek's stepfather, Coleman Barrow, raised him and his sisters as his own. Coleman and Florence taught their children the importance of an education and the Bible. Unfortunately, Derek had a low IQ, making it difficult for him to maintain good grades and do well in school. By age 11, Derek was caught peeping into windows of girls in his neighborhood, a trait that he would continue into adulthood. At 13, he was arrested for a burglary, and at 16, he was arrested because he had pulled a knife on a boy in a fight and was actually charged with second-degree murder. Now, we didn't see anything that said he went to jail because of this, but, like, he had to, right?
I mean, at least juvie, because he was, what, 16 at the time?
Oh, no, he was 13. Oh, no. At 16. Yeah. No, you're right. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. You feel like that would be an important point in this, but...
I would. We'll just assume he went to juvie.
Yeah, we're going to assume that he did something. But it couldn't have been that long, because at age 17, he was once again arrested for being a peeping Tom, and despite having multiple complaints and arrest, he wasn't incarcerated. So maybe he's just like the luckiest kid in the world committing crimes.
The luckiest little criminal.
Yep. In 1988, Derek met and quickly married Jacqueline Denise Sims. The two had two children, a boy and a girl. Shortly after his marriage to Jacqueline, Derek pled guilty to the unauthorized entry to an inhabited dwelling. Turns out he'd been stalking a woman named Colette Walker, age 36. He forced his way into her apartment and tried to convince Colette that they should date.
Yeah, what? I mean, that's a really good way to go about it.
Yeah, what? That's casual. Okay. Colette was able to ease Derek out of the apartment, but it didn't stop him from leaving her his number, which made it really nice for police, a nice, easy way to track him down. Unfortunately, despite his background and thanks to a plea bargain, he only received probation for this.
Guess that luck continued into adulthood.
I know, it's so strange. Well, he towed the line of a life in which he was a responsible, loving father that took his family out on the weekends, and then the one where he frequented local bars and had extramarital affairs. Despite his infidelities, Jacqueline remained devoted to Derek and just got used to him being arrested and imprisoned. Casual. One of Derek's infidelities led to a relatively serious relationship with a woman named Cassandra Green. In July 1999, Cassandra gave birth to Derek's third child, another son.
All right, now that's enough about Derek's personal life. Let's start looking into his string of local crimes. In September 2001, Gina Wilson Green, which as far as we can tell, there's no relation to his girlfriend Cassandra, whatever. But Gina was a 40-year-old nurse who was found raped and strangled to death in her home just a short distance from Louisiana State University. An investigation of the scene showed that Gina's purse and cell phone were both missing. And couldn't find anything about her purse, but her cell phone was found weeks later down an alley. The case wouldn't have any leads and went cold for a period of time. But we're going to go ahead and stick a pin in this for later. On January 14th, 2002, Darren DeSoto came home to find his 21-year-old wife, Geralyn, lying in a pool of her own blood. Geralyn was a student at LSU and had plans to attend graduate school that coming fall. Darren was actually the lead suspect in Geralyn's case until DNA evidence later ruled him out and linked her case to another series of murders. In July of 2002, Derek knocked on the door of Diane Alexander's home, and he didn't introduce himself using his name, but he said he was lost and asked if he could use the phone. Now, remember, this is a time when not everyone had cell phones and a lot of people relied on landlines. So, being a decent person, Diane said yes and let Derek into the house to use the phone. When Diane's back was turned, Derek ripped the phone from the wall and attempted to strangle her with the cord. Luckily for her, Diane's adult son came home unexpectedly, which frightened Derek enough to flee the house, leaving Diane alive. In his haste to get out of the crime, Derek took the phone with him. Diane's son recalled seeing the phone's cord hanging out of the car and was able to give a detailed description of the attacker, a large black man, and his car to the police. Unfortunately, nothing would come of this report, but we're going to go ahead and stick another pin in it. In the same neighborhood that Gina Green was murdered, another attack took place about 8 months later. On May 31st, 2002, the body of 22-year-old Charlotte Murray Pace, a graduate student at LSU, was discovered by her roommate. It was a particularly brutal scene, and I'm almost certain that she needed therapy after witnessing it. Charlotte was stabbed 81 times, her throat was cut, and part of her ear was missing.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I wrote down holy fuck when I was like taking notes while watching the Forensic Files episode on this.
A little aggressive.
Yeah, very aggressive. And at the crime scene, there were no signs of forced entry. And quite honestly, with the amount of times that she was stabbed and the fact that there was no forced entry, I would think that that would point to signs of someone that she knew. But I don't think I saw anything that ever said that that was a theory.
Yeah, you would think those two points would lead them to those that were close to her first and foremost. How could 80 stab wounds not be emotional? But if this case is going where I think it is, an emotional killing doesn't actually mean the victim was aware of the quote-unquote relationship. If he was stalking her and she somehow upset him or became perhaps unattainable for the killer, it could have flipped a switch in their head and basically led him to a no one else can have her thought.
Yeah, man, I really love your brain.
Just drawing all these connections.
Connecting the dots. Now, there were many people that were hunting for a motive. In fact, in that episode of Forensic Files, Charlotte's mother said that of all of the people, of all of the women in the world, this killer chose her daughter and she would give up anything to know why. But she also flips it and says she acknowledges that she'll probably never know why. She doesn't even know if the killer could articulate or even knew why himself, which is absolutely heartbreaking.
It really is, but I am glad that she kind of has like the logical side mixed in with her emotional feelings.
Yeah.
Because she probably will never find out, and he probably cannot articulate why.
Yeah.
But just 2 months later, in July 2002, Byron Kennemore came home to find his wife Pam missing. The front door was open, Pam's keys were there, but she was nowhere to be found. While searching the house, Byron found a full bathtub, as though Pam had been home taking a bath and trying to relax. There was also blood on the bedroom carpet near the bed. When the blood was tested, it was determined that it belonged to Pam. It turns out that Pam had inadvertently left her keys in the front door after she got home, and the intruder then used them to let himself in, which is terrifying. What a simple little accident. But don't leave your keys in your front door.
Good tip.
I know, but I mean, it's just such a simple thing. Like, I'm sure many people have done it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure people do it all the time.
It's like leaving your keys in your car or something.
Or, like, how I can never find my keys when I'm over here.
Or you just lose them. Yeah, everyone's lost their keys.
100%. That's why they make those little, like, tile things. Not an ad, but, like, those little tile things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've so seriously, you look at it. Find your iPhone of sorts.
Yeah. I've seriously considered, like, getting one. Because I always am misplacing my keys.
I've gotten Rich one. He has one on his keys.
Beautiful.
You have to have that one spot. You always put them.
I'm working on that.
Yeah. All right. Back to the story.
Yeah.
There are multiple small details that could really have changed the outcome of this attack. Pam and Byron had a young son who luckily was staying at a friend's house and was spared from the possibility of maybe seeing his mother murdered or just taken or becoming a victim himself. Pam's body was discovered 3 days later under the Whiskey Bay Bridge, about 60 miles from their home. She was stabbed to death and sexually assaulted. A phone cord was found near her body, which, a phone cord again. Interesting weapon of choice.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's also pretty convenient. Like we said earlier, time when a lot of people still had landlines. Easy to grab, easy to take with you. Like, easy to dispose of.
Yeah, that's true. What am I trying to think of? A weapon of convenience.
Yes.
But it's just an interesting one because, you know, like a book could be a weapon of convenience too.
That's true.
But anyways, doesn't matter. The medical examiner determined that she was murdered on the same night that she disappeared. Byron had an alibi that was corroborated and he was cleared as a suspect. An eyewitness came forward and said he thought he saw Pam slumped over in a white pickup truck on the interstate the night she disappeared. He described the driver as a young white male, which is good news, right? Nope. There were about 35,000 white pickup trucks registered in Baton Rouge at the time, which is bananas. Obviously a very common, popular color and truck. Like, well, I guess if it's just a truck, you don't know the make and model. But anyways, using forensic evidence that proved Pam was sexually assaulted and going out on a limb here saying it was probably semen, a DNA profile was extracted and run through CODIS. No results were found as the perp hadn't been arrested for any other crimes, but the DNA evidence did show he had killed two other women several months earlier, Gina Green and Charlotte Murray Pace.
So at this point, it had become clear that Baton Rouge had a serial killer. All three of these cases had something in common. Like you said earlier, Avery, the telephone. I don't know why I just said that so quickly.
I really like the inflection.
The killer took the phone from the scene, or a telephone cord was used as either a restraint or a weapon. This small fact led to some speculation that the killer asked the victim for assistance and then took anything he touched with him. ADA Tony Clayton said on Forensic Files that it would be easy enough for the killer to wipe down surfaces like doorknobs and countertops, but that everything he touched, he took with him, and that those were his trophies. Just because the police were onto the fact that there was a serial killer didn't mean that killer was going to stop. And on November 21st, 2002, 23-year-old Trinicia Denae Colombe, mouthful, went to visit her late mother's grave. Her mother had been buried just 7 months earlier. Unfortunately, Trinicia never returned home from this visit. Her body was found 26 miles away. She had been sexually assaulted and beaten to death. Just like in Pam Kinnamore's case, a witness reported seeing a white male in a white pickup truck near the cemetery. 4 months later, on March 3rd, 2003, a doctoral student at LSU, Carrie Lynn Yoder, was kidnapped from her LSU apartment. Carrie's body was discovered 10 days later near the Whiskey Bay Bridge, not far from where Pam's body was found.
A similar location.
Dun-dun-dun. DNA evidence from the scenes would link Trinicia and Carrie's cases to the other three. Police were desperate for a lead and called the FBI in D.C. to ask for a criminal investigative analysis, a profile, if you will. FBI Special Agent Mary Ellen O'Toole said that they thought the perp was someone who followed women and watched them from afar, that shortly after he interacted with these women, they would become uncomfortable. The FBI predicted that the killer was antisocial and earned a below-average income. The Baton Rouge police reported that they were looking for a single white male in their mid-20s to 30s.
I wonder if they had thought about his choice of victim at all. If you look at the images of all of the women we mentioned before, it seems like he largely went after younger white women with dark hair.
Yeah, I also wonder if they made any connection to LSU, since a lot of the victims were either students or lived near the campus. Just, you know, a little added extra thought.
Yeah, I dig it.
Although 90% of serial killers are white, the FBI says they never made any predictions about the race of the Baton Rouge serial killer, despite what was reported in Baton Rouge. And despite this, the Baton Rouge police collected DNA samples from over 1,000 men between the ages of 20 and 40. Most of them were white with a history of criminal activity. None of these samples matched their killer.
Eventually, molecular biologist Tony Fredakis called the Baton Rouge police to warn them that eyewitness testimony and behavioral profiles aren't always accurate. In terms of eyewitness testimony, he points out that sometimes people just lie and or flat out mistaken.
Thank you, Dr. Fredakis.
Yes, someone has to be thinking this through. He offered to perform a new type of DNA test called DNA witness that would identify the killer's physical characteristics. DNA witness would give the exact ancestry of an individual on information in their DNA. It's based on the fact that all humans are descended from a common gene pool. Instead of using the pigmentation gene, they are able to make an indirect inference about your skin shade using the precise knowledge of your ancestral background. You know, paraphrasing for the good doctor here, no idea. To test the doctor's claims, investigators sent him 20 DNA samples and asked him to identify each race, or the race of each sample. He was able to correctly identify them all, including the percentages of white, black, and Asian within them. After passing this lovely little test, Dr. Fadakis went to work on DNA from the crime scenes. The result of Dr. Fadakis' test changed the course of the entire investigation. Based on previous eyewitness testimony, the police were searching for a white male, but the results of Dr. Fadakis' test revealed a man of 85% African and 15% Native American. This led a few things to being realized. One, Dr. Fadakis was right. Eyewitness testimony isn't always reliable. They had multiple witnesses that claimed to have seen a white man in a white pickup truck, but DNA evidence clearly proved them wrong. A connection was also made to the break-in and assault at Diane Alexander's house, so go ahead and take that first pin out. Now, remember the phone cord hanging out of the car?
Yes.
Well, do you also remember the phone cord that was found near the body of Pam Kenmore?
Ooh, I do.
Well, you are on the same track as the police. They decided to test the two phone cords using a fracture match comparison. Although plastic stretches when it's pulled, the ends eventually or usually stay the same when that occurs. Because of this, police were able to match the ends of the phone cord at the crime scene with the remnants of the phone cord at Diane Alexander's house. So, this murderer kept the phone cord from the quote-unquote one that got away and took it with him to commit other crimes. A bit of speculation here, but it seems to indicate to me that not being able to kill Diane really affected him and probably was a reason why his killings became more brutal. The anger he had against her probably translated into the 81 stab wounds Charlotte endured, his next victim. But it makes sense, right?
No, it does make sense. I didn't have words that immediately came to my brain.
That's fine.
I'm sorry. But police went on to call Diane in to view a lineup to see if she could identify the person who attacked her. She identified one, Derek Todley, who had previous charges for burglary, stalking, and peeping into windows. He, of course, denied being the Baton Rouge serial killer. I roll. Police sent samples of his DNA to forensics to be tested. After his DNA was sent for testing, Derek Todley and his wife, Jacqueline, I just like the name, went on the run.
Okay, wait, I forgot about his wife, but okay, lady, like, live and let live, but come on. You can leave your husband and not feel like you've failed your marriage pretty much at any of the previous points, especially when he wants to go, or wants you to go on the run with him. She had to have had some suspicions about what was actually going on.
Yeah, I know, but remember, she had been around for him being in and out of jail for other crimes and always stood beside him. Which, I don't know, I feel like some things you can stand behind your husband for, but the brutal sexual assault and murder of multiple women? Get it together, Jacqueline. Within days of the DNA sample being taken and Derek asking Jacqueline to go on the run with her, with him, he's a man. Jacqueline had withdrawn their two children from school. The results of the DNA testing showed that Derek's DNA matched all five samples of the Baton Rouge serial killer. Shocker. When police went to his home to arrest Derek, they found the house empty. They then tried to go to Derek's mother's house and his longtime girlfriend's house looking for him, but both locations showed no results. The pair first fled to Chicago, but ultimately ended up at a cheap motel in Atlanta. Not close to each other at all, but whatever. Following a tip, police were able to arrest him just outside of a local tire shop in Atlanta. After he was arrested, he was charged with first-degree murder. Investigators then learned that Derek Todley's DNA matched the skin cells under the fingernails of another murdered LSU student, 21-year-old Geraldine DeSoto, that we talked about at the very beginning of our story. So go ahead and take that other pin out. Investigators believed that Derek followed his victims to know when they would be alone so that he could go to their homes and attack them when they were the most vulnerable. Although he could be linked to 6 sexual assault and murder cases, he was only tried for 2, the ones that they had the strongest evidence against him, Geraldine DeSoto and Charlotte Murray Pace.
So yeah, I'm just going to stop you real quick. I get that. I really do understand, you know, you want to make sure you have enough evidence so then the trial doesn't get fully just like booted out of court, right? Mm-hmm. And the charges don't get against them. But do you think it's really hard for someone to decide not to try a case when you know it, like in your heart of hearts, it's that person?
Oh, I'm sure it's incredibly difficult because that's the whole reason you go into like that line of work is because you want to see justice prevail and people be punished for the atrocities that they commit.
Yeah, it's just so sad as, you know, like an outsider to hear that only two of those people were able to like seek justice, really.
Yeah.
But yes, I also get, I would like to just see them in jail.
Yeah.
I don't care if they stole a pencil. Like, to jail you go. But anyways, sorry.
The sole survivor, Diane Alexander, testified at the trial, and it's not clear if it was one or both trials, but we're going to go ahead and speculate it was both because it just makes the most sense. She testified that Derek Todley was the man that had attacked her, and as an additional bonus, sweat had been found on Diane's sweater following the attack that she endured, and that sweat was able to be forensically matched to Derek, proving that he was her attacker. In the Geraldine DeSoto case, he was found guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. In the Charlotte Murray Pace case, rhyme.
Yeah, actually, that sounded really cute.
Derek was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to death. He was set to die by lethal injection in December of 2004. Pam Kinnamore's mother said that the death penalty was too good for him, that they should execute him a little at a time, not just because he took her daughter away, but because the coroner said that his crimes were more extreme than necessary. Derek Todley spent the rest of his life at the maximum security Louisiana State Prison in Angola, which, that's where Archie Williams was locked up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Tying it back to episode two.
Okay.
I was just talking about that case yesterday, and that made it pop in my head.
Yeah.
The state of Louisiana never got to carry out Derek's death sentence because he died of heart failure on January 21st, 2016, at the age of 47.
Cheater.
Cheater, cheater, pumpkin eater.
I mean, at least he's gone off the face of the earth.
Exactly. But on a little bit of a happier note, Dr. Fridakis made history. This was the first time that biogeographic testing, aka DNA witness, was used in a criminal case. The technology now has a 99% accuracy rate, and new tests can now predict eye color with 92% accuracy. Fucking science, man. I love it. Dr. Fridakis hopes for a future with much lower crime rates due to the advancements of DNA technology. He's hoping that we'll get to the point that people won't commit these types of crimes because they'll realize that they might as well just leave their driver's license at the scene because DNA evidence will evolve that much.
Man, we can only hope that's true.
Yeah. All right. I think that's enough true crime. Should we get onto the self-care?
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get some wine.
All right. Cute.
And I know you're gonna leave that in because you're a bitch.
Because I love you. And we're back. We're gonna actually just put our mask on with you because this week we're gonna do the Sephora Collection Pearl Eye Mask, which is super easy to put on. So we're just gonna do it with you.
Not super easy for me. Oh, never mind. I got it. Nobody panic.
Opening the package was pretty difficult, not gonna lie.
Oh, good. I'm glad it wasn't just me.
No. In case you've never done an eye mask.
I haven't. This is my first one.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cute. Okay. It's super easy. I mean, it's just like sheet mask. They're, you know, single use. They have a little backer to it. You just pull them off and place them ever so lovely against your under eyes. Okay. Slimy little buggers.
Buggers.
I'm going to need a mirror. Please hold.
Oh, okay.
Mine's on. So while Nicole's finishing, put hers on, I will tell you more about this. So there are six different types of these masks that Sephora sells. Each of them has a different skin refreshing benefit. The fibers within the eye masks themselves are better to conform to the contours of your skin and help improve results. So basically it's just able to kind of get closer to your skin and really saturate the area with whatever mask you actually try. But this one is the pearl mask, like I said before. So the white pearl mask itself is for brightening and unifying your complexion. The pearls are finely ground to release the beneficial chemical compounds, and bear with me, guys, aragonite and conchiolin. So sorry if I said that wrong, but that's what it looks like.
I don't know.
I think so. Anyways.
Sounds good to me.
Those things, it helps to heal blemishes, reduce redness, and help minimizing large pores, which I find a little funny in an eye mask, but I guess it's just a general benefit, not necessarily because of it. But a fun fact, if you want to just spread around all of the moisture within the packet. So this one's only on for 15 minutes. Ooh.
I was just going to ask if you had remembered to set a timer.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Perfect.
All right, timer set. 15 minutes. And I mean, obviously you just pop it on and then you take it back off and then you rub in any of the excess
juices,
to help maximize all of the benefits. So this one is for largely dark circles, which would also be partially dryness, most likely. But this has a ton of different ingredients within it. But the ones I thought were the most interesting were first and foremost, the white pearl. So this is from, like, it's a natural origin, but it helps to brighten and unify complexion, as I mentioned before. Oh, I already read all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Shit.
It's okay. Let's talk about the broccoli extract.
Ah, I'm sorry, guys. This is what I get for reading out of order. I'll just do this little note. So the first one, obviously, is the white pearl. I kind of already spoiled all of that, but it's, as I said before, for brightening and unifying your complexion. But the other really interesting one, which I haven't found before, but doesn't mean it's not in other masks we've tried, broccoli extract, which has brightening and unifying properties as well. This extract derives from newly sprouted broccoli seeds and reduces skin redness and damage, helping to fortify skin cells to fight the effects of UV radiation.
Man, broccoli really is a superfood.
I know. So cool. Broccoli in your mask. As a vegetable lover, I'm into it.
You really are a veggie lover.
I do. I really like vegetables.
I know.
They're delicious. But yeah, that's it.
That's it for the mask. Now you get to hear us talk.
The mask is on.
Yes. So I am really excited because my mom came to stay with me last night. And it was her first time seeing the condo since I moved in.
Okay. So tell me, what'd you think?
I knew she was going to think this. She literally said, well, first of all, she loves the condo. And she kept gushing over like, oh, this is the perfect shower curtain. And it was just really cute.
Yeah. Just so everyone knows, Nicole's mom hasn't been over yet because she wanted to give Nicole time to settle in. And she didn't want to like sway her with any of her own opinions. So she gave Nicole time to make it her own.
Yes. And she loves it. We went shopping. I got the cutest little like speckly coffee mugs that go great with my kitchen, and I got an entertainment stand.
Which is real cute.
Yeah.
What a nice little find.
Yeah. I immediately knew I was going to get it, but I tried to, like, I don't want to say, like, play hard to get, but I was like, I'm going to think about it. Two aisles later, I was definitely like, I need to go back for that.
But I think that's a really good way to shop. Be like, do I really need it? And you think about it for a little bit. It's like, not to derail, but I went to Michael's a week ago, mm-hmm. and I didn't mean to buy a wreath, but I did, and I was in between two. I was like, do I get one that's more like fall mm-hmm. generic, or do I get a fun Halloween one? It was a little Day of the Dead Halloween mix, and I really liked it, but then I was like, well, what am I really going to get the best use out of? So my logical side won over, but
oh, it's funny because I did that exact same thing because we were looking at the door decorations because they're like, oh, I want to get something for my front door. And we were looking at wreaths and there was a cute Halloween one and then there were a bunch that were just like very fall. Mom was like, oh, do you want to get this one? And like showed me a cute Halloween one. I was like, well, that's really cute, but I feel like I need to take it down right after Halloween.
Right? Yeah. It's like you can't enjoy it as long.
Yeah. The other one I can leave up until after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I guess it's your house. You can do whatever you want. People can suck it if they don't like your Halloween decorations, but
yeah,
at least for fall, you can leave it up for like 3 months and no one would bat an eye.
Exactly. Yeah. And then next I'll have to get a Christmas one.
I know. That's why I'm trying to stock up on my Christmas decorations.
There's so much Christmas stuff. Oh, sorry. I just hit the microphone. There's so much Christmas stuff out already. It's, I don't know.
Well, I mean, Christmas decorations are going to be huge this year. Everyone's going to be home.
That's, yeah. And then you, oh, do you think it's going to be like when we were kids and you just drive around just to look at Christmas lights? Oh, can we do that?
I'm sorry, I do that already. What? That's not for kids, that's for people.
Well, I honestly, I haven't. I did it once when I was dating who should not be named.
Mm-hmm.
Because we went with this kid. But
well, so last year we actually did that. We just drove through some of like the nicer neighborhoods,
yeah,
in the area and looked at their phenomenal lights and just every decoration they had.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, actually, speaking of decorations, we walked around our neighborhood earlier this week and just looked at everyone's fun Halloween decorations.
Oh, fun.
And there are there's this one house that has these little baby dinosaurs, like skeletons.
Stop it.
They're not, I guess they're like maybe 2 feet tall, but they have 20 of them.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
It's
that's
so cool. Funny.
Oh, maybe we can go walk and look at them when we get lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I would like to see that.
Okay.
Sounds cute.
But yeah, there's like one little street that is just like all of the families really decked out for Halloween.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I really like Halloween, but again, it's just like the logical side of me. I just can't go buy a bunch of decorations, especially like I don't have kids. I'm sure all of those people do.
Yeah.
So.
I'm sure when you have kids, you'll decorate.
Yeah. I did see this really cute picture on Instagram where they had all of these pumpkins lining their front steps and then these like big giant wire spiders that looked like they were climbing on their house.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I was like, I'd be into that.
Yeah, no.
It looked real cute.
Yeah. And I bet that once you guys have your deck, like you'll decorate more out there too.
Yes, when we're proud of the front of our house again.
When it's not all naked and like.
Yeah. Yeah, we're working on.
Torn up.
Getting, yeah, like a front porch. Your mask is sliding. I can see it.
I feel it. I thought I was just imagining it.
Uh-uh.
Okay, good.
But okay. Good recovery. Yeah, so we're in the process of, like, getting a front porch built on our house. So everything is just kind of torn up because why would we put a lot of effort into it if we're going to, like, start construction hopefully soon?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll see. Their processes are so long. Permitting, you got to get approvals. Anyone that's done it.
How long did you sit in that, like, town hall meeting?
Oh, 3 hours? Three hours to make our case. Well, not our case, but everyone. Our specific one took like 4 minutes, but there were a couple that took an hour, and it was cool. It was love hearing neighbors fight over someone's like change to their home.
Yeah, I just can't imagine caring that much about someone else's house. It's like,
no. I don't get it. Honestly, yeah. Like live and let live.
Yeah.
I do understand, you know, some people are asking to build something really close to their property, and I understand that's disruptive, but at the same time, like, you chose to live that close to people.
Yeah.
You should kind of expect it.
Yeah, if you don't want someone that close to your property, get a bigger property.
Yeah.
Don't live in the city.
Yeah, move to the boonies.
Yeah.
But I think people just like to complain, really.
Well, and there's nothing else going on right now, so, like, people have nothing else to do but, like, stick their noses where they don't belong and, like, stir the pot, cause some drama.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes, I think everyone's bored. But I had no idea. Like, they actually, when you go through this process, like, put it in the local paper and...
Oh, wait, so you were in the paper?
Apparently.
Oh.
I don't get it. I didn't see it. But, I mean, they just make you aware that, like, there's this change being proposed, and then you can come to the forum and speak for or against it if you care.
Yeah.
It just, I mean, it makes sense. Like, make the community aware, sure, but it doesn't seem that important.
It's going to be this huge project.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. But I'm glad you guys got approved.
Yeah. On to the next step.
Yay, being a homeowner.
Yeah. Okay. Oh,
speaking of being a homeowner, I had my first, like, big thing happen.
What?
One of my light bulbs went out.
Oh, God.
I haven't changed it yet.
Is it the one light bulb that you keep moving back and forth?
No, it's the... Man, I don't want to talk about my ghetto lamp. No, it's one of the ones in the kitchen. It's actually right above the dining room table, which is really annoying because it's not as bright over there as it normally is. But it's not so dark that I care enough to get up on my step stool and change the light bulb.
Well, first question, do you have?
I do. Okay. I do. The previous owner left me because it's one of those like floodlights.
Oh, uh-huh.
He actually left like one of the he left one of those and he left me like a bunch of like the refrigerator filters.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally a light bulb out above your head right now.
Yeah, and, one of those.
Yeah, and I don't care to change it. Yeah. There's others. It's fine.
It's not incredibly dark down here, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm really bad about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one goes out, and unless you're in the room, like, when it actually goes out, It's just a different light filtration.
Yeah. No, it's
filtration.
Yeah, I just feel like it's not a big deal yet. Like, I'll get around to it when I get around to it.
Uh-huh. I totally agree.
I also got my ballot in. Delivered, which is good. We were just talking about that. And then I also got my first, like, Dominion bill, so.
You feel very professional?
I feel like a real homeowner now. Waiting for my first mortgage bill to come in. That's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. That's the best feeling. Yeah. Oh, wait. I owe a bunch of money. I forgot.
Oh, yeah. But.
I mean, no different than paying rent in reality. You got to pay.
So true. Mm-hmm. Trying to think what else is going on. How long do we have left on the timer?
About 5 minutes.
Ooh, 5 minutes.
Yeah. But so what else did you and your mom do? Did you buy anything else?
I bought some. I needed to have more pillows for, like, when I have guests over.
Oh, like bed pillows?
Yeah, like sleeping pillows. Because my couch, whenever it decides to show up, is, like, a sleeper. It's got, like, a queen size uh-huh. bed with, like, a memory topper. I want my guests to be comfortable.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome. But no, I figure, because I only have 3 pillows on my bed. So I was like, I need to get more for when I have people come over. So I bought some new pillows. I just ordered some, like, this is like homeowner's dream. Like, I just ordered some more pillowcases. And yeah, so I'm just waiting for those to come in. I got a new purse. Woo!
Oh, well, that's just fun.
Yeah. But other than that, yeah, no, I didn't get anything else for the house. Oh, I got some Mickey Mouse sponges. Like, I already have sponges, but my mom was like, you know they're just going to get ruined, right? It's like, you know they match my kitchen perfect, right?
Yeah, you love a good theme.
Yeah, I do. Oh, I do. I do love a good theme. Which, can we talk about Halloween?
Yeah.
What are we going to do for Halloween? Are we going to have, like...
Okay, so it's so funny you say that. Because my parents are closing on their house, like, Halloween week. Mm-hmm. And my mom made a comment like, oh, we'll be up there for your Halloween party. Like, she half meant it as a joke, but half was like, I'm sure you're having some of your friends over.
Yeah.
And I was like, Mom, it's COVID. Like, we're not doing anything. And she goes, well, I mean, I'm sure Nicole will at least be over. And I was like, maybe she has plans. I don't know.
She's not wrong. No, but I have no plans. No, that's.
I'm going to go with maybe us and, like, I don't know, 2 more of the girls or something if we want. Just, like, do a movie marathon, have some wine.
Yeah. I like how you say 2 more of the girls as though there's more than that left. Everybody left us.
Hey, you never know when she'll be home.
That's true.
But, yes, maybe Rachel. Ow. I don't know. I don't know what everyone's plans are. But something low-key, probably. I do feel a little conflicted about the candy situation. I feel like I need to buy it just in case. But I feel like trick-or-treating is legitimately not going to happen, and then I'm just going to be stuck with all this candy. And then I'm going to eat it.
I don't feel like that's a problem.
Oh, but it is a problem, because...
But would you buy... Okay, so here's the thing. Are you going to, like, buy it and put it, like, in a bowl and put it outside so you don't actually have to be around the children?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So it's just, like, the off chance that someone is trying to trick-or-treat. Like, I'm happy to give you candy, but, like... COVID rules.
Stay away from me.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a little rough to hand someone candy. Also, I feel like as a parent, it'd be really annoying because I personally am Lysoling everything. So Lysoling, like, every little tiny piece of candy would be a real pain.
Yeah.
But, I mean, regardless, I guess I'd rather be prepared than not. But my issue is when you buy candy, it's never all of the good stuff. Mm-hmm. You only like 1 or 2 of them. So I typically take all the other ones to the office for, you know, the people that like the other candies I don't like. I can't do that either.
You can give them to me because my office is open.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, look. Crisis averted.
Yeah, it's like, as long as I have a way to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Like, or, you know, share with the world. I just...
I now understand why the rich people buy the full-size candy bars, because you just buy big ones of whatever the fuck you like.
Oh, that's true. And then,
when the kids don't take them, you have a full-size candy bar for yourself.
Yeah.
I actually get it.
That's pretty genius.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do that and just buy, like, big Twix.
Big Twix.
Or whatever. God, it's been a long time since I bought a candy bar.
Not me.
Oh, I buy like dark chocolate bars, but that's like the extent.
Yeah. No, I'll like randomly get like a hankering for like a Reese cup or a Take 5, which thank you for the reminder. I need to go buy some pumpkin shaped Reese's before they're out.
dire.
Yes, because they're better in the shapes. They really are. They should only be made in shapes.
Well, probably because there's more chocolate ratio, right? There's more outside. I've never had one,
My mom thinks that there's more peanut butter.
Huh. But are they fatter?
No. Hmm. They're just... the egg is obviously the best shape of the shapes. But I think that it's because the chocolate is smoother than... Because the regular Reese cup has, the hard edges from the
wrapper. Oh, I see what you
wrapper.
Mean. Yeah.
Whereas when it's a shape, it's just all smooth. And it's not, hard, chunky. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I just looked at my phone to see how much time and the timer went off. And I just stopped it promptly.
Oh.
So that was the timer.
Noise. Avery's like, ooh. Right, so now we just rip them off our... Not rip them off.
Yes, we rip them off our faces. Now we gently remove them. Okay. And just let them down. And then rub in any of the extra.
Get off my finger.
But just because it's so easy, we can hop straight into our grades if we'd like. Oh, there is a lot left. I didn't really think there was. I guess because the outside of it dried a little.
Yeah.
That's good. So I was actually reading some reviews on this before we tried it. And from what I can tell, rave. Most people really like them and say that it really does help with their under eye circles. So I'm kind of pumped to see that. Not having looked in the mirror myself, I personally think it felt really nice. I mean, it's cool, but because of its small nature. It's not overwhelming like putting on a whole sheet mask.
That's true, yeah.
So I think it felt nice. Very soothing, relaxing. And it doesn't have any weird scents. So nothing to affront the senses.
No, it doesn't smell like broccoli.
What if it did? That'd be so weird.
But raw broccoli or cooked broccoli? Because cooked broccoli smells bad.
Wow, you're a real hater.
No, I love the taste of broccoli.
What about roasted broccoli? It smells like char.
Honestly, roasted broccoli is my favorite, and I have a ton of broccoli at the house, so I am going to make some roasted garlic broccoli tonight.
Mm, yeah, sounds delicious.
Yes.
But, honestly, I don't think there's a ton to talk about it, because it's pretty simple, so I can give my grade real fast.
Okay.
Yeah. I personally would give it an A. One, because I like under-eye mask. It's a nice little treat without having to... dedicate your whole face to it, you can't talk, you can't do whatever. My issue is that it does kind of slide down your face a little bit, mm-hmm. which I was surprised by, because it did feel like it was really, tightly adhered to my face, but it did slide a little.
But, I mean, that kind of makes sense if it's filled with liquid, plus gravity.
Thank you.
No.
I mean, I guess, dripping. Yeah, people might also typically lay down when they do these.
Or tilt their head.
Yeah, tilt. Yeah, because you're, watching TV and we're sitting straight up. I don't know. It doesn't take them out of the A range.
Also, we were talking a lot, so, our facial muscles, our facial muscles were, moving a bunch.
Okay, all right. I guess it is our fault.
It's always our fault.
Yeah, but, I mean, having just recently taken it off, my skin does feel a little... tingly? Is that right?
No, yeah, because mine feels tingly too.
Okay, all right, a little tingly, which is good. Nice revitalized sensation.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, I would probably go an A-, B+, somewhere in that range. I don't know. This was my first eye mask, under eye mask.
Yeah.
But I liked it.
What did you think about just the experience?
This one for me, it felt tingly under my eyes the entire time we were doing it. I don't know if yours did.
I think I was overwhelmed by, the cool sensation in general. So maybe that's the same thing.
Maybe. But I did have, the sliding as well. So I think the next time that I do, we do, because let's be honest, it's probably going to be with you,
mm-hmm.
an under eye mask that I would like, I think we should try to not talk during the next one and see if they still slide.
Okay. All right. So what I'm hearing and, how we've transitioned is we basically stopped doing the mask. At the moment, we're actually talking about it.
Yeah.
Fine. Especially for sheet masks. That was just way too rough.
Yes. Nobody wants to hear us talking about, how our heads are tilted back. Yeah.
But the traditional, clay or, any type of mask is not a sheet mask, really.
Yeah.
We could do that. And just until you can't really talk too much because your face goes too tight.
I don't know how to talk like this.
And it dries. But okay, I think it's good that You generally liked it.
Yeah, no, I overall, I liked it a lot.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll give it an A.
Okay. All right, good. Hopefully we think our under eyes look brighter and more invigorated tomorrow, later.
Fingers crossed, because I don't know, you heard me complaining about it to Selena.
Yeah, we all need a little help there, a little extra hydration. On the under eyes, it's easily forgotten.
Well, yeah.
It's like such sensitive skin, and you don't want to pull on them too much, so then you typically don't rub anything on your under eyes, and you don't want to get it in your eyes.
Yeah.
Another solid point.
That too.
Yeah.
That, I guess, is that all for this week?
I think it is everything.
Okay. So before we sign off, make sure you follow us on Instagram, like our Facebook page, send any questions, comments, concerns, show notes, show suggestions, et cetera, to us at maskedmurderpodcast@gmail.com. And that's all for this week.
Take care of yourselves.
Sources for today's episode include Forensic Files episode titled Tight Fitting Jeans, which originally aired in 2005 but is available now on Netflix, imdb.com, influencer.com, nola.com, oxygen.com, sephora.com, thoughtco.com, wbrz.com, and cbsnews.com.
Holler!